Hey friends, thanks for listening to the City Network podcast. We're so glad you're here. Before we get to the episode, I want to take a moment to tell you about the Soul Care Prayer Summit happening April 22nd to 24th up at Quaker Hill in McCall. The summit is for men and women who serve as leaders and missionaries in the Treasure Valley. This is a space created for you as a visionary leader to hear from God and care for your soul. And it's not just for pastors. It's for anyone who has a vision for kingdom transformation in their sphere of influence. We want to create a space for you and your spouse to pray over that and to pray for our valley together as a unified church trying to reach our communities with the gospel. We're also helping with childcare this year, so let us know on the registration form if that's a need for your family. Go to thecitynetwork.org/soulcare to register. And now for today's episode.
Every church needs to think about, you know, its ways of gathering and scattering and its ways of manifesting its presence in these different size structures, right? So even your friend's church, I would say, hey, it's important for them. Even they're really good at what they are doing, and that's going to reach a certain group of people. But it would be important for them to still have some manifestation in some form, may not be their bullseye, of the distributed expression. And I think that what this really does is it prepares all of us for the ongoing adaptations ecclesiologically that we need that fit within the New Testament witness for this period of time that we're in. As we journey into this post-Christian season, we have all these tools at our disposal, and we need to not set any of them aside, because we may need to bring some of them back to the fore in 10 years from now, while some are relevant now. And again, that's the great thing about the New Testament witness, is that it gives us some dexterity in terms of what's faithful.
You're listening to the City Network Podcast. Our mission is to grow and multiply healthy churches in the Treasure Valley and beyond. Head to thecitynetwork.org for more info on our initiatives to catalyze church transformation and church planting. Here's today's podcast.
Hey, welcome back. Thanks for joining us today. We just had a hiccup trying to start this interview. Friend Chris Backer, he's one of those guys that as soon as he shows up, you start looking at him going, I bet that guy knows how to do this thing. Then pretty quick, you end up running the whole thing. It's just what happens. Chris is the director of Fresh Expression America, the Ecclesia Church Planting Network, part of with Redemption Hill. And then also he leads the Ascent Network. And that's one of the ones I want to talk about. But before we jump into that, we were trying to do this recording. And Chris, you told me you told your laptop not to restart and not reboot. And then it did it anyways. And then a self-healing process. Did you pray while it was doing the self-healing? Is this spiritually aided?
I did not. This is a new computer, and it just restarted, and it said it literally said in the process of self-healing. It's what ran across my screen.
Things you expect the self-awareness of your laptop to bring. Is it, I'm just wondering, is it like a talk therapy sort of thing where it need to be like, you're a good computer, you can do this? Or was it more, hey, I need to go through a process of really diagnosing what's wrong or self-healing?
Well, it said it needed an update. I told it to wait till later, but I look at it and think this computer must have been built and programmed in the Northwest somewhere, probably Seattle. Self-healing.
Yeah, there was some software engineer who was going through a self-healing process and thought, our laptops need this too.
That's right.
All right, well, welcome. Glad you're here. There's quite a lot to talk about, but let's start with diving in, leading this, what's called the Ascent Network. And I want to talk about what was the impetus to get that going, and what's the vision for what you guys are up to?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll try to be as brief as I can. This really kind of started several years ago when And a bunch of leaders from across the church in North America begin to just kind of wrestle with, you know, what would we would talk about as like the collapse or the collapsing of sort of the denominational era in Western Christianity. And probably for a lot of people that are on this pod, listen to this podcast, or, you know, the church planter variety, this is not something that they think is particularly important. But you know, for the most part of church history, churches have been organized in some form of, you know, denominational family, and especially over the last couple hundred years. And I think even when you go back to the book of Acts, you see there's always been some kind of, I'd say, translocal covenanted church collaboration around mission. So not just in your city, but beyond your city, you know, across a wider territory, local, regional, national, global. And in the collapse of, you know, our traditional denominational structures, you know, people began to talk about, well, what's valuable about the way things have been? And are there some features of this that they don't need to be lost? They just need to be reappropriated, reorganized, reinvented for a new season. And the second thing that I think kind of factored into really this kind of coming together is, I'd say really this became more apparent kind of post-COVID, but what I saw post-COVID was the typical non-denominational church having a desire to be less non-denominational than they were before, to really have a sense that they had a network, a wider association. They did not want to be in a denomination. They did not want to sign up for a hierarchical structure, but they wanted to have something more where they were just not totally independent. And I think that sort of the, you know, the rise of the independent church or the non-denominational church, you know, just really came out of the baby boomer generation and the things that have proceeded from that. And I think as the next generations of leaders, you know, Gen Y, Z, and so forth, are, you know, in more positions of influence and leading in North America, I think they're seeing a desire to say, no, we don't want to be just a totally isolated congregation. We really need a broader network group to connect with. So really what Ascent kind of emerged at to say, what would a new kind of North American or national network look like that's gathered around the Lausanne Covenant, the Cape Town Commitment, that way of being, you know, I say that way of being evangelical, and I like that because it identifies our theological and missiological commitments, not in the North American polarities, but it drives us to say, like, this is the witness of the gospel that is growing in power around the globe. It may not be growing in power in North America, but it's the one that's growing around the globe. And my personal experience is the one that is growing in power in North America. And so how do we find our way together? Because that's the Christian witness in North America that I think is strongest, but it's so distributed that people don't experience it. You know, our, just like in our political realities, you know, the farthest right and the farthest left seem to dominate, and they are not actually the expression of what, you know, most people in North America live into on a daily basis. And I think the same thing happens with the church. And so what we're trying to do is, how do we amplify, unify, multiply that kind of Christian witness? Because we believe it's that kind of Christian witness that is going to be most effective in engaging our increasingly post-Christian, post-secular kind of culture. So that's really what we're about.
Well, so what I've been telling people, most people don't know the history of evangelicalism, like as a movement. Right. And I think what you're describing is trying to get back to the roots of mid-century evangelicalism that was really a reaction to and a rejection of fundamentalism.
It was, absolutely.
And I think that they've been conflated because fundamentalists thought, I'm going to grab hold of the evangelical name because they held some of the evangelical theological quadrilateral, you know, like that,
right,
like those things that we talk about, the authority of scripture, conversionism, like those things that are very valuable to us. But fundamentalists have taken that and said, we're going to utilize that name and honestly drag it through the mud and treat, because the main difference between fundamentalism and evangelicalism is fundamentalism hates the world and is opposed to the world, and evangelicalism loves the world and will die for the world.
That's right.
And so I feel like what you're saying is, hey, those of us who want to embrace a classical version of evangelicalism that looks more like the beginning of the 19th century and the mid 20th century, and reject some of the polarity of fundamentalism, and a lot of the political spillover has just been so significant that it's hard to find space to be us, because we get co-opted into these cultural conversations. So I love that you guys are doing that, because I think there's a lot of people saying, I want that centrist Christianity that's a third way, not just in between the polarities, but a third way.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, if I'm talking to somebody and I have a piece of paper or a whiteboard, you know, I'll draw a simple XY axis, and across the X axis, I say, this is the axis of orthodoxy and progressivism. And then the Y axis is really speaks to what you were talking about, is a heart of affection versus a heart of alarm. Mm-hmm. So one's a theological posture, the other is a missiological posture. And I think that, you know, when I look at that, you know, it's that upper right quadrant, you know, orthodox, but affection to the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's the space that Ascent is trying to live into, to unify, to amplify, to multiply. It's again, the space that I believe is producing the most effective Christian witness in our context, but it's very distributed. Mm-hmm. Because and this is the thing that a lot of times we don't think about in the kind of church planting world. It's the space that's not institutionalized. And yep. All the other spaces are institutionalized. And so therefore they have, you know, a greater visibility and in some senses influence. That's why, even though, you know, folks like you and I, our voice is probably normative in terms of effective Christian witness across, you know, all kinds of denominations and cultural backgrounds. But, mm-hmm. But that space lacks any sort of institutional stability. And of course, you know, we're in an era where we're not trying to build institutions, but it's that, you know, organizational dexterity, that way that people can kind of come together. So that's what we're trying to do, you know, in a post-organizational way.
Yeah, in a dispersed kind of yes. networked way, rather than a yep. centralized hierarchical
that's right.
denominational structure. Which, so I think that actually touches on a lot of what church planters across the board have to deal with. Because when you start planting a church, you have to say, what kind of church are we?
Yep,
what do we yep. believe? How do we live? And then there's the, well, who's our family? Who's that tribe of people that we can call on for funding? We can call on for supporting us, you know, when we struggle? Who's going to be in it with us? And I think most church planters, like you said, the last 10 years have said that the payoff between the cost of joining a denomination versus the value of being a part of it is it's a tougher value proposition than it's ever been.
Yes.
And especially the ones who are like, well, we'd love to be you to be a part of our denomination. We want you to give us, you know, we're going to give you $50,000, and then we're going to ask you to give us 15% of all of your giving for the rest of your life.
Perpetuity, right?
Perpetuity. That, like, I'm going to say, like, I'm okay at math. I know that those numbers don't add up, you know, like it ends up being this big output. And I think for a lot of young people, they say, I don't necessarily want to spend money for retirement plans for the last generation. And I don't want to spend money for administrative hierarchy. I want to spend money for mission. And that's why I think that's why networks start to make sense, is it transforms kind of the way the money's spent outside of the organization. Where are you seeing like traction? Like, who are the people who are feeling drawn to the Ascent movement?
Yeah. Well, in specific, what I find is, I'll just speak plainly about it. There are a number of, again, non-denominational churches that I think occupy that quadrant, you know, if you use that XY axis that I gave you, they're feeling like, you know, we need something more, and it needs to be more than just you know, once upon a time, right? Like, you know, a lot of people joined the Willow Creek Association, you know, before all of its troubles. And, you know, like, that was really like, hey, we joined this and we get a few discounts on things, right?
It means I went to GLS that one time.
Right, right, right. So people say, no, we need something more than that, more than that. So there's that group of folks. I think there's a lot of folks in across many of our major denominational structures that are saying, I'm not at home in my family. So you could say, like, you know, you even take, you know, like the Southern Baptist Convention, which I would say largely occupies like that bottom right quadrant, right? Like Orthodox, you know, would align in Orthodox theology, but generally speaking has more alarm to the world. But there is a significant contingent. It's small in the Southern Baptist space, but it might be, you know, 1,500, 2,000 actual congregations who say, we're not there. You know, we're not at home in our own family. We are having a lot of engagement, I'd say, from post-schism Methodists who are not necessarily looking to join a new denomination, but know that they are not going the same direction that the United Methodist Church. I think there's a lot of smaller denominational bodies that often people aren't even aware exist that, again, they're struggling to keep up the bandwidth of the things that they've done over the last 50 years. And so then things like church planting and multiplication, evangelism, disciple making, those things kind of get jettisoned to the side for financial reasons. And so a lot of those folks are coming around and say, we still want to kind of contribute and be engaged in a powerful mission endeavor. So we're not going to leave our denominational family because that's still of value to us in our heritage, but we do want to be part of a new kind of connectionalism. So we're picking up some traction there. I think, you know, institutionally, that I think this helps again place people. So we've got right now 4 seminaries that are official Ascent seminaries: Northern Seminary, Truett Seminary connected to Baylor, Weinbrenner Seminary in Ohio, and Kairos University, which is based out of Sioux Falls, but has, you know, different branches, speaking, you know, all across. So I think that, you know, we're trying to rebuild a robust seminary network that exists in that space that can be part of equipping of those kinds of leaders. So those are some of the kind of markers, I think, for me, of the kinds of folks that are drawn to this. And again, I always say to people that, you know, we have to get out of our North American mental model in terms of the, you know, the polarities that exist, and let's identify ourselves with the global evangelical witness.
Absolutely. Let's dive in, because so we're putting on an event here in Boise together, alongside Fresh Expressions and Ascent and the City Network, and that event is really focused on this vision of gather to scatter. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit about what you see as the future of the mission of the church in North America. Where is their fruit? Where is their opportunity for church planters and church leaders to say, we think that God is working in this way and we can participate there?
Yeah, gosh, that's such a vast question. So
I'm giving you a big open one.
I'll just riff on it in a couple different ways. So I do think we do have to realize that it is a vast question. There's so many answers that are there in relationship to that. Things that come to me as I think, you know, we still need what I'm going to call more traditional approaches to church planting. And there are many parts of our country that still, and in Canada, that still need, I'm just going to call it a Sunday gathering centric approach. I think that is diminishing, but it's still important. Now, one thing that I have kind of experienced over the last 6 months, though, in conversations with folks in the UK who've been real thinking partners with me for 15 years, is that they're seeing a rebirth in the UK of more traditional approaches to church planting and a decline in the more kind of micro church distributed approach. And I've always felt like, you know, that the UK experience, the Western Europe experience is, again, probably 15 to 25 years ahead of the kind of post-Christian experience and development in the US. And so that's just something I've been paying attention to as they try to understand why is this gaining traction. There may be something really there in the kind of after the transition from, you know, Christendom, Christian to post-Christian setting, where that will become more visible and more important. So anyway, I think over the next 3 decades, some kind of traditional approaches to church planting are going to be really important. Then there is kind of the hybrid kind of approach, which is what we're kind of talking about in Boise, which is how do our everyday congregations, you know, a First Baptist, you know, a New Life Church, you know, that have had that more Sunday-centric approach for 2 decades or 10 decades. How do they develop and cultivate new kinds of Christian communities? How do they multiply new ecclesial expressions alongside and interrelated to the church they already have? Mm-hmm. We call that the blended ecology of church. It's the gathered church and the scattered church working together. And you know, you guys, obviously, because I know you, Robert, what you're doing. I mean, this is something that you're living into in Redemption Hill, but the more institutional expressions of the church haven't really lived into the full capacity of that yet. And I think that's one of the things we've learned in the Fresh Expressions movement over the last 10 to 15 years is that when, you know, more institutional, gathered, set congregations get a vision that they can multiply something that doesn't have to leave and be, let's say, independent or autonomous, but can be connected to reach a different group of people that are never going to show up, you know, to a Sunday centric type of approach. People find a lot of possibility and it becomes like a new mental model, new way of thinking about church. So I think that some of this grows out of the kind of multi-site thinking, but it's not multi-site in the sense of replicating the same thing all across the board. Mm-hmm. It's saying, how do we have a contextual approach among different groups of people, but we don't have to be, you know, 30 different independent groups. We can be part of the same sort of network family connected to the same more inherited type of congregation. So yeah, I think that's
like,
a real...
It's like giving people freedom to say within an existing congregation, God is starting to birth in them maybe a passion for their neighborhood or a passion for, you know, their sports teams or a passion for, you know, maybe the homeless. And instead of saying, I'm going to create something new, you're saying, hey, how can we help you do it within the confines of and with the support of your existing more traditional congregational model?
Yep.
And I think that part of that, what I'm hearing you say... Because I've been rethinking more of my ecclesiology to create space to say that the smallest expression that has the our minimum ecclesiology is church. Like that is the people of God gathered. But when they are deeply interconnected together into this network, they're actually stronger than when they're alone. And so you're kind of saying like within a traditional model, how can we leverage the resource and the space and the people for kingdom mission. I love that kind of a vision.
Yeah. And I think it's deeply New Testament in the sense that, you know, and I agree with you completely what you're saying about, you know, our deepest, ecclesiology is it might be 7 or 8 people gathered on mission together. And that we want to validate that as that's church. And yet, at the same time, in the New Testament, you know, I mean, the ecclesia actually manifests in different forms, right? So you do have the house church, you've got the citywide church. There's also instances where, you know, the kind of the mobile missionary team and structure is referred to as the ecclesia. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, the New Testament gives us a witness to church happening in multiple places and spaces with kind of different constructs. Yeah. And I think that that's part of what, you know, so you take a place like Boise. Yeah, there might be house churches. There might be a section of a city. There might be a network of dinner churches across Boise. Then there's the church in Boise at large. And then, of course, you know, that's just the city that's surrounded by hundreds of thousands of people in the valley. And I look at that and say, each of those expressions of the church is not just valid, it's also valuable.
Yeah.
And we will benefit to see it that way and to organize ourselves accordingly.
Well, that's something that I think is for church planters, they want to, because of business models, they've thought we have to differentiate ourselves. And to do that, we have to show why what we're doing is useful or better than what's come before. And so church planters, you know, like you'll see their ads on Instagram that's like, you've never seen a church like this. And the answer is, actually, we have. We've seen several churches just like that. But there's this belief that my job is to create differentiation so that people will choose me rather than the church down the street. But when you have an ecology that says that the church itself in the city, it wins and loses all as one. It's not this congregation versus that congregation. It's all together. What starts to happen is I look down the road and that myself and Keith Harrington, who leads the largest church in the state of Idaho, together, we planted the City Network together. I'm a micro church network guy and he's mega attractional guy. And I wanted to, from the beginning, say what he's doing is a beautiful expression of evangelism that's reaching more people than almost anybody in our region, because he's really good at loving and caring for people who are far from Jesus. And more people are going to start their walk with God there than anywhere. And I also want to say, I think God's given me a particular calling to enable and send missionary teams out to help reach the lost in neighborhoods that won't show up in church. And both of those are very like valuable parts of kingdom work. And it doesn't need to be an either or, it needs to be a yes and yes and some more. And there's some versions of this expression that we have never seen before, because we need, you know, Dick, Jane, and Harry's like new way of doing it that no one's ever seen, because they haven't been given permission to go out there and do it. So I love the way that you think about it, in that there's, it's not just one or the other, and it's not just this and that, it's together we form a better whole. That's a beautiful vision.
Yeah, and I think that when I think about how that applies, I'd say, well, and every church needs to think about, you know, its ways of gathering and scattering and its ways of manifesting its presence, you know, in these different size structures, right? So even your friend's church, Keith's church, you know, I would say, hey, it's important for them. Even they're really good at what they are doing, and that's going to reach a certain group of people, but it would be important for them to still have some manifestation in some form, may not be their bullseye, of the distributed expression. And I think that what this really does is it prepares all of us for the ongoing adaptations ecclesiologically that we need that fit within the New Testament witness for this period of time that we're in. And that's when I even think about the folks that I've been talking to in the UK, who we've been partnered together through Fresh Expressions for 15 years, it's just so curious to me that they are further into a post-Christian situation and they're seeing the reemergence of, you know, the more gathered centric approach in terms of effectiveness. Well, what that tells me is that as we, you know, as we journey into this post-Christian season, we have all these tools at our disposal, and we need to not set any of them aside, because we may need to bring some of them back to the fore, in 10 years from now, while some are relevant now. And again, that's the great thing about the New Testament witness, is that it gives us some dexterity in terms of what's faithful.
When you look at history within the North American and Western Europe context, we've had pretty much, I would say, four great awakenings since the early 1700s, late 1600s, that have been these outpourings of the Spirit that have resulted in ecclesial openness, and then And then a focus on building and sustaining systems that grow and mature the church. And then there's a season of decline because these administrative structures no longer serve the church. They have to die, and then there's rebirth. And so I feel like we're Europe is seeing, because they're 30 years like kind of further down the road in terms of the post-Christian journey after World War II, mostly because we didn't experience the losses in World War II that they did that brought the postmodern, you know, way of thinking about death and destruction and decay. So what I'm saying is, I think that we're seeing the end of the last boom, and we're going to be in this season of tilling and laying fallow and preparing the ground for what's next before we're going to see a, you know, kind of a season of fruitfulness. So it feels like this season is, hey, let's get back to the roots of who we are and what we do, and let's do it the best way possible and see when the Spirit might be moving and join him in that work. Is that a bit of what you're saying?
Yeah, I think it is. I think that the nuances, though, in our own North American context, which were not experienced to the same degree at the same time in Western Europe, is the rise of the global church and the distribution of the global church to, in our case, North America. And when I look out three decades, just to use some very round terms, I think in three decades, a third of the church in North America is our historically Anglo and Black congregations. A third of the church in North America is Latino. Mm-hmm. And a third is the global church that has come to North America.
Which is what they've seen in Western Europe. You look in London and England, like it's filled with people
absolutely.
From Korea and India who have come to faith and have moved as immigrants. I think we're seeing that with the Latino community, where we evangelize with Protestantism through Central and South America. And now they're bringing with them spiritual vitality back with them, which is a really cool thing. And then we're starting to see here in Boise, we have tens of thousands of refugees who have resettled here. Many of them come from Muslim backgrounds, but many have started these refugee churches, and their kids are becoming a part of the mission of reaching their friends and family in high schools and middle schools in our city.
Yeah.
That's really beautiful.
It is. And in fact, you know, two of the main things that we are working to do in the early phases of our ascent effort is one is around catalyzing the Latino witness for the sake of the whole church. Certainly for the sake of the Latino community, but for the sake of the whole church. How do we help the Latino community be central to what the church, broadly speaking, is doing in North America? And also the global church, the diaspora church. Right now, I'd say it's not been a lot of attention to how do we really receive the gospel that has grown in power around the globe. How do we receive that in North America? But I think from a big picture missiological perspective, those are going to be two of the essential elements in every city and in many other places over the next couple decades.
And one of those things that we're dreaming together about is, in our city we have a very strong network of Anglo pastors who love and care for one another and are planting together. But almost a third of the valley is Hispanic, and we don't have those leaders around the table with us. And so at this gather event in May, we're going to be gathering up a group of Hispanic leaders to start praying about how do we reach the Hispanic leaders and churches in our valley, and then how do we multiply them, and then how do we let them be a voice. And my hope is they're planting multicultural churches that reach both white and brown kids
absolutely
together, because I think kids are drawn towards diversity. They're drawn towards different experiences, but also like that's a vision of kingdom connection that happens at the second generation that's harder at the first generation, which I'm really excited about.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that I don't have any data to prove this, but it's just my own intuition and hunch based on, you know, experience, right? I think that in the Anglo church settings, so much of our effort is around how do we engage, convince, compel skeptical, educated Anglo folks into the life of the gospel. And And honestly, one of the things that I think the Holy Spirit is doing and is going to do is, it's number one, it's just going to be really hard. It's hard for skeptical, educated Anglo folks to be evangelized and engaged with the gospel by non-skeptical, educated Anglo folks. And I actually think that what God is doing and will do is will use the Latino witness, the global witness, the Black witness. I think that witness is actually much more capable of reaching the skeptical, educated North American Anglo person. Yeah.
Well, it's kind of like when you go to Alpha Course and you listen to someone speak with a British accent, all of a sudden the gospel makes sense because it's not your, you know, Ned Flanders neighbor talking about Jesus. It's like, oh, it's true there, so maybe it could be true here in my life.
Right.
I think that same thing happens with our immigrant and refugee neighbors, where they see the vitality of Christian witness in their lives. And because it's not through their own cultural lens, they're able to see it more clearly. You know, it's like, oh, there's something powerful there about their network, their family, their theology that's bringing life to our neighborhood.
Yes.
Where, you know, the white guy down the street, he's just, you know, a preacher man, and, you know, who cares what he does? You know,
that's his job.
Yeah, this is job is to tell them about Jesus. But if you flip that, all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's space for it. I agree. I think there is room for that. Okay, well, we're getting to the end here. I'd love to hear from you when you're thinking about the next 10 years of the church. You talk with a lot of leaders from around the world. Three questions. Rapid fire questions.
All right.
If you're planting a church in any city in the world because of its strategic value, where are you going to plant? And let's just start there. I got another one for you, but we'll start there.
Yeah. So for me, I think if I was making that decision, right, and I'm not talking about like everyone should make the decision, but I would look for a mid-sized city that has not been given attention.
Okay.
So if someone said, hey, look across North America, I'd say, you know, there's been so much attention given to New York, Los Angeles, right? The biggies, Chicago, right? Millions of dollars from multiple groups, denominations, networks, church, but have been poured into those places. And of course, because they have so many people. Mm-hmm. But I think that what has happened is I'm just going to call them our secondary and tertiary kind of metropolitan areas have been largely forgotten. Mm-hmm. And it is those areas to me that are have the most ripeness for someone answering that question. So, you know,
So you're talking Cleveland, Sioux City, Billings, Montana, Spokane.
Absolutely. Yep.
You know, yeah. Sacramento rather than San Francisco.
Yep. Sacramento. Yep. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay. I like that because I think that when you go to a place that's sexy and big and has the life of the city that you can draw from, a lot of times it's about you more than it's about the city. But when you go to a place that's not as desirable, it's you saying, I'm going to give up something of myself to be and give my life to a place. There's some power in that witness. I like that.
Yeah.
All right. If you were to go train and prepare for church planning or prepare for ministry, where would you go and what would you study? I know we're all old now. We've already done this so long ago, but
yeah.
And you could say a couple, but start there.
So you are you talking like institution wise or how would I just?
No, this is open, an open question.
Okay. So I think one thing I would say is there's probably multiple ways you could do this, right? But I think one of the things that we have lagged on over the last couple of decades is really the theological and missiological preparation around the core of Christianity and being able to defend that in a winsome way. I know many people who have graduated seminary and they have or have been trained in some kind of, you know, church-based approach or school or some combination of, but they could not actually uphold in any significant way something like the divinity of Jesus. Mm-hmm. Like they couldn't attest to it exegetically, and they couldn't deal with it apologetically in any real sense, right? Like if you were to say, you know, like give me a reason to believe in this faith that you have, they wouldn't be able to do that. Yeah. And I think that, you know, there were in decades past, that was the primary focus of preparation. And we've gotten away from that for good reason, because of all of the contextual things that we need to have and to be aware of. But I just think that would be an element that I think we have lost. And if the average person, part of this, it comes along with, you know, that people don't want to do a long degree now, right? So they want to do a short degree. They don't want it to be that hard. And the truth is, some of those things just require more work and more preparation.
After walking through, I didn't go to Bible college. I went to secular university, which, you know, had a great way of preparing me for ministry.
Absolutely.
But I would say if somebody graduated from seminary and they haven't led somebody to Christ, I don't think that they should be put into a church. I think that they need to help somebody start their walk with God and learn how to walk with Jesus and demonstrate ability in evangelism and discipleship.
Yeah.
It won't happen if you're working in a church most of the time, because churches aren't asking their staff or elders or leaders to do those things. But that's like the primary work we're called to, is to make disciples and to preach the gospel. And most seminarians aren't capable of either of those things by the end of their seminary training, with the exception of those who maybe come from, you know, I came from a parachurch missionary organization that was focused on reaching students. And so I had done that, but most haven't. They're coming from places where they aren't prepared for those things. So I agree with you totally.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and I would want to encourage people too to find some way in their early season to work with children and youth.
Yep.
Because I mean that's when most people come to faith.
Yeah. If you want to reach anybody, you better reach kids and their families. That's it.
Yes.
Absolutely. 90% are going to happen there, which I think is such a funny thing that we spend so much time putting on church for adults. And what I always say is, I'm just keeping the adults busy so the important things can happen downstairs. You know, like that's the way that we think about it, is like, I'm the distraction to make sure that the adults don't mess this up, and hopefully then train them on how to do it and get them involved. You know, like those are all things, but yeah, for me, the primary mission is the next generation. That's it.
Yep.
That's all we're here for. All right. Well, Chris, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. It was really great.
Hey man, glad to do it.
There is that Ascent gathering happening. Do you want to, people can find the details. We'll put it on social media with the podcast, but do you want to talk about an invitation for folks for that?
Yeah. And I think this is just a great example. So we've got, Ascent, Fresh Expressions, the City Network, Mission Northwest, Truett Seminary, all helping out in some way to develop and put together this gathering in Boise in late May. And so if you're a church leader of any kind that really wants to learn how to live more into the gathered and scattered realities of the church, how do we tie those things together? How do we have a distributed expression of the church alongside of our more gathered expression? That's really what this event is about, helping you find the leadership capacities within your congregation who can be mobilized to, reach their neighbors, their friends, their people at their work, and yet how they can do that kind of all under the same, quote unquote, umbrella. And so love for you to join all the folks that will be gathering May 17th and 18th, I think it is.
Yep, 17th and 18th.
At Summit Church in Boise, Idaho.
Yeah, you even said it right. That's, you win. You're saying Boise right. You did it. Hey, there is a little bit of your Eastern. The Z slips in at times, but you're close. Like, you're really close to saying it right. Well, thanks for being on today. This is fun. And, man, we got more to talk about. We'll have to have you on again to talk some more and walk through. Man, I feel like the future of the church, it's fundamentally up to those who choose to engage and to create what's next. And so, like, we're in this moment of shift, and we're saying, okay, who are we going to be? And what's the next generation need? And what's God calling us to? Really important questions. I love that you guys are asking those questions. So thanks for leading us in that.
Hey, man, no problem. I'm glad to be on with you. And I think all of us who find ourselves just sort of mid-career, I think that we really need to see ourselves as bridge people. You know, we're a bridge from what was to what will be. And by the time we get to the end of the bridge, you know, somebody else ought to be in these chairs.
No question. All right. We'll talk soon. Take care, man.
See ya. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the City Network Podcast. If you have any comments or questions, join the discussion on our Facebook group at thecitynetwork.org/group, or sign up at the website to subscribe to updates from our blog and podcast.